Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5-year long study of the New Testament. Today's program, lesson number 6 of week number 35, studying Mark chapter 7. As we begin, these reminders. All of our free materials are available online by clicking the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. To study the Bible online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call us at this toll-free number, 1-855-IGH-6988 to receive a free 30-lesson Bible study series. Or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com to request that series. Let's return to our study of Mark chapter 7. Here's where we were at the end of our last broadcast. Mark 7:17-23, Jesus to the disciples, the parable explained. In verses 18 and 19, taking up just where we left off, we note that, once again, Jesus used the human digestive system to teach by analogy the greater significance of what comes out of a man's heart over what goes into a man's mouth. All foods are, based on Jesus' statement, eliminated and thus purified. Verse 20, but what comes out of man, that's what defiles a man. That truth was in direct opposition to the Pharisaic scribal insistence on following the tradition of the elders. Verse 21, to show the distinctive difference between what goes into and what goes out of a man, and thus the difference between what defiles and what does not defile, Jesus provided a list of evils, a list of sins that come from within, out of the heart of men. He included evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, verse 22, thefts, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. In verse 23, Jesus said that all these evil things come from within and defile a man. Sin, according to this text, starts from within. It does not start from outside of a man. This parallels what we learn from the opening chapter of James' letter. In verses 12 and following of that chapter, we learn about the origin and the development of what eventually becomes sin. That text reads, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I am tempted by God,' for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death." That's James 1:12-15. James states that the man who endures temptation will be blessed. Verse 12, but the blessing that James has in mind does not come just because someone's tempted. If a blessing came just because someone was tempted, then everyone would be blessed. No, the blessing only comes when someone endures temptation, meaning, in this context, when someone overcomes temptation and thus does not fall into temptation. That understanding will be further highlighted as the text continues. Furthermore, the English word endures conveys what was intended in the original text, an ongoing, continual state of abiding, of remaining. God does not bless us when we are in an ongoing, continual state of giving in to temptation. James uses the phrase, "when he has been approved," to support the idea that he had in mind when he used the words, "endure temptation." We are not approved by God when we succumb to, that is, when we give in to temptation. but we are approved by God when we refuse to yield to it. To be approved means that we have met up to God's expectations, that we have, so to speak, passed God's test. Again, that demands that we have been approved, accepted, because we have resisted temptation and not because we have surrendered to it. Similarly, those who will receive the crown of life will receive it because, as a matter of choice, as a matter of life, as a matter of repeated practice, they fight against temptation. They resist temptation. James makes that point in a different and most emphatic way in James chapter 4, when he encourages his readers to resist the devil. James 4, verse 7. Resist, in that context, was a command and not an option. So where does defilement, Mark 7's language, and sin, James 1's language, where do they come from? Jesus, in Mark 7, tells us that defilement comes from within, out of the heart of man. Verse 22, James explains the origin of sin in this manner. We cannot claim to be tempted by God. Why not? Two reasons. First, because God cannot be tempted to sin. And second, because God always wants and always does what's best for us, meaning God does not try to get us to sin. Where then does sin come from? James says that it comes when we, each of us, are drawn away by our own desires. Those desires draw us, lure us, entice us. They appeal to us. And as the desire grows, James talks about it starting as a conception, it eventually produces, James says that it gives birth to, sin. And sin, when it becomes full grown or mature, will lead to death. James then, in much more detail, reaffirms what Jesus claimed in Mark chapter 7. We become guilty of sin because of what's on the inside of us. When our hearts are filled with evil desires, then all of the things that Mark listed in Mark 7, 21 and 22 will come out of us. Failing to wash your hands, according to the tradition of the elders, might prompt the Pharisees and the scribes to find fault with you, but you have not sinned by not following this tradition. We move next to Mark 7, 24 through 30. Jesus and the Syrophoenician woman, her faith, his miracle. Verses 24 through 26, the Syrophoenician woman's request, heal my daughter. Verse 24, Jesus left where he was, and he traveled to the area of Tyre and Sidon. If you trace the recent travels of Jesus, you will note that in Mark 5, 1, Jesus traveled to the country of the Gadarenes. The most notable event that occurred in that region, Jesus cast the legion of demons from a man who lived among the tombs. In 5:21, after being asked in 5:17 to leave the region of the Gadarenes, also called Gergesa, Jesus crossed over again to the other side. The place was not specifically identified, but Jairus, who met him there, was often identified as being a ruler in the synagogue at Capernaum. In 6:1, Jesus went to his own country, referring to Nazareth. In 6:6 and following, because Jesus was unable, due to their lack of faith, to heal many people in Nazareth, he left. He left Nazareth and was a circuit rider evangelist for a while, as he went about the villages in a circuit teaching. Later in that chapter, Jesus, along with the disciples, sought respite from the crowds, verse 31 and following. But the multitudes followed them, and they arrived at the deserted place before Jesus and the apostles did. That place was not named, but when the multitudes arrived, Jesus taught them, and Jesus later fed them miraculously. Afterward, starting in 6:45, the disciples entered a boat and headed across the Sea of Galilee toward Bethsaida. Jesus went up to the mountain to pray, verse 46, but later walked on the water, where he eventually joined the apostles, verses 48 and following. The storm that was then brewing was calmed when Jesus entered the boat, verse 51, and they made shore in the land of Gennesaret. Gennesaret was another name for Galilee, the northern region of Palestine. The Sea of Galilee was also known as the Lake of Gennesaret. thus their arrival was probably somewhere near that lake, that sea. People came from throughout that area, bringing many sick on beds to Jesus so that they could be healed. Mark 6, 55 and 56. Jesus, in that setting, traveled to villages, city, and the country, healing along the way. In the opening verses of Mark 7:1, our current study, the Pharisees and the scribes came, challenging Jesus about the disciples' failure to follow the elders' tradition. This land of Gennesaret region and all of the villages, cities, and the country are not specifically named, but they were, it appears, in the general area of Galilee near the sea. That brings us to chapter 7, verse 24. Jesus left that region, and he traveled to the area of Tyre and Sidon, cities in the land of Phoenicia. If you check the lay of the land by consulting a map of Palestine during the time of Jesus' early ministry, you will see that both cities were on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. They are some distance away from Jesus' usual places of preaching, teaching, and healing. Moreover, they are outside of Jewish territory. Interestingly, however, people from this area had, earlier in Jesus' ministry, traveled from these two cities when they heard what Jesus was doing. See, for example, Mark chapter 3, verse 8. When Jesus arrived, he went into a house, hoping that no one would know that he was there. That, however, would not last long. As we have witnessed before, when people find out that Jesus was in town, the crowds would gather. In Mark 1:36, when Jesus was not immediately found, Peter and others searched for him. In Mark 2:1, soon after entering Capernaum, people heard that he was in their village. In 6:31 and following, when Jesus and the disciples tried to get away for a break, the crowds anticipated their travels and then beat them to their destination. In the region of Tyre and Sidon, Jesus entered a house. The owner of the house was not identified, but following protocol that we find throughout the New Testament, Jesus was more than likely staying with a Jewish family, a Jewish patron in that area. We do not have the time to fully explore this, but the geography of this region, roughly 30 miles or so from where Jesus was, and the connections that it had throughout the Old Testament period proved to be a most worthwhile study. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Mark chapter 7. This reminder as we conclude, to start our free self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.